Thanks for giving your time to the Word this evening. I greatly appreciate that. And guys, great job leading, truly. And it is amazing to me, as we were praying right before service, the amazement was that what I was about to say that they didn't know, they picked probably the three best songs to go with it. So the last song, Be Amazed in the Presence of God. We went from Mark chapter 8 this morning. We're going to go to Mark chapter 9 this evening. Mark chapter 9 is the transfiguration. You got the presence of the Father. You got the presence of the Son. It doesn't get any better than that. So would you turn to Mark chapter 9 with me? And let me tie a few topics together as you're turning. First of all, the Gospels themselves, but Mark in particular, is not for Bible lightweights. As you've read through Mark, for example, have you noticed that there's kind of story after story after story after story? And you may ask the question, what in the world does this one have to do with that one? And so often what we do is we study these little nuggets, if you will, these half-chapter, the biblical term is pericopes, these segments that are broken up, because we don't see the connection of one to another. The reason is because you are used to being hand-fed the connections in stories. But that's not the way it was read in the ancient world, or may I say, it's not the way it was heard in the ancient world. It was your job as a listener, and it was my job as a storyteller to help make those connections. So you see the connection between the affirmation of Peter when Jesus asks him, who do you say that I am? You are the Messiah. Now, stop. When he says the Messiah, you have 8 chapters to figure out what he means by the term Messiah. By Messiah, he means this: I've watched you. You are all powerful. You can do, carefully, you can do whatever you want to do. And Peter might read that as, you can do whatever I want you to do. That would be wrong. I've seen when people are hungry, you feed them. I've seen storms come up that only God could cease, and you do it. I've seen lame walk. I've seen blind see. I've seen deaf that gain ears to be able to hear. I've seen dead raised into newness of life. You are the Messiah, a.k.a. you're a miracle worker. You are all powerful. So Galilee, where Jesus begins his ministry, could I define it this way? Galilee is the land of miracles. How many of you want to live and stay there? Jesus says, don't tell anyone about that land. Don't tell anyone about what you understand about me. You guys are the land of miracles. You are Galilee. And then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed. If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Chapter 8 and chapter 9 are transitions from the land of miracle to the land of Jerusalem, to where all needs are met. No, I'll put it this way. Where all wants are met. Jerusalem is that land of suffering and shame and sorrow, the land of the cross, the land where all needs are met. And he says to those that are in Galilee, come follow me. John tells us a similar story in John chapter 6, where Jesus teaches very hard teaching. He's just fed the 5,000. And then he said, unless you eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, you will have no part of me. And it says this, many disciples began to leave because his teaching was hard. Most people, my friends, want to live in the land of miracles. And Jesus calls us to a deeper following when he calls us, will you follow me even if the miracles cease. I don't cease to be able to do it, but what if my revelation, my full revelation of myself, is found in the cross and not in your full belly? Will you still continue to follow me? In Mark chapter 8, is the revelation of what humans think about Jesus. You are the Messiah, a.k.a. you are the miracle worker. I will follow that guy. Mark chapter 9 is the story of Jesus going up on Mount Transfiguration, and the voice of the Father said, "This is my beloved Son." Whose voice are you going to follow? Will you follow the voice of Peter, who sounds just like Herod and functions just like the culture to keep us swayed in all of our wants? Or will you actually follow the voice of the Heavenly Father? "This is my Son." Listen to his command. Listen to him. This is that transition of whether or not you will live in the land of Galilee, in the land of miracles, or will you live in the whole gospel? Don't you find it interesting when Peter replies to Jesus, "You are the Messiah," Peter is then told firmly not to tell anyone about that. Why would Jesus say such a thing? Because, my friends, living in the land of the miracles is only half a gospel. Jesus says, "Be quiet. Don't tell anyone." Have you noticed, if you've read through the Gospel of Mark, the number of times, 5 to be exact, where the disciples or anybody else is told, "Don't talk about me"? Angie and I were in South Africa in 2009, and I was teaching all the Wesleyan district superintendents all over sub-Sahara Africa, and they said they have a major problem on their hands. And I said, "What's that?" "The health and wealth gospel is taking over sub-Sahara Africa, and we have no answer to their theology." I said, "Really? Like the Bible's not working for you? We don't understand. Preach the whole Bible, because the health and wealth gospel is primarily found in the first 8 chapters of Mark, isn't it? Did you realize, you may not, that the miracles almost totally cease in the second half? As Jesus is talking about his mission is not found around the miracles. The mission is found around his death. The health and wealth gospel preaches from the first half. And I'm asking you, I'm begging you, live into the whole gospel. Because Jesus at times is calling us out of the land of miracles to live in Jerusalem, to walk with Jesus to the cross. And so don't be surprised, on Friday morning, I'll take you directly to the cross. And at the cross, we find out no one follows Jesus there. It is a place of suffering and shame and sorrow. But it's at that place that the very heartbeat of God is completely revealed. And most people want to live in the land of miracles. It is comfortable and it's warm. But the voice of the Father is calling us from the land of miracles to the land of the Son of Man, to the land of suffering, to the land of shame. So this evening we will bridge that gap on how we can traverse from the land of miracles, the land of wants, to the land of what you really need. Friends, as you do ministry in this world, whatever your major is, if you are here, it's because God's called you here. He has equipped you for whatever area of service for the kingdom you're learning about. You will be pastors. And friends, if you serve him in whatever your capacity is, by only offering people the answer to their life's dilemma in the land of miracles, you will be missing the power of the cross. You will be missing the land where death exists. Now, we try to avoid death at all costs. Can I make just a simple observation before we dive into the text? And the simple observation is, most times in the church, we spend too much time being paramedics. Now, let me say that again. In the church, we spend too much time being paramedics, which means we want to help people that are dying back to the life they had. The gospel calls us to die. Come and die. I'd rather have you be more predominant in bringing people to newness of life. Allow them to die to the flesh and arise to newness of life. That's exactly what Miller was talking about. We come to the altar to die. Well, let's not pray that you get better. I want you to flat out die so that you can be raised to newness of life. Does this make sense? So let's stop being paramedics. Start pronouncing somebody dead so Jesus can raise them to newness of life. Does that make sense? Is it okay if I please tell me this or this? If it makes sense, I'll go on. I want us to stop just dwelling where God can meet our needs or our wants. I want us to have him meet the deepest needs of our life, which is dying to self and being raised to newness of life. I want to walk in the Spirit. The altar represents the cross. Very often what we want then is say, give me power to live a resurrected life. But you don't live power to live a resurrected life without the Spirit. So I want Good Friday, death. I want Easter. But in all counts, what I really want, I want Pentecost, where the Spirit comes to live in me and empower me to live in the land of Jerusalem, the land of death and resurrection and the coming of the Spirit. Then he can send me out anywhere. Let's not just live half a gospel. Let's live the whole gospel. Mark chapter 9, the Transfiguration. Mark chapter 9, verse 2. 6 days later, so 6 days after the pronouncement that you are the Messiah, and Jesus correcting the Christology of Peter by saying the Son of Man will suffer and die. Peter had 6 days to ponder this. I'm going to give you a Greek word. I was talking about this at lunch. I'm going to give you a Greek word not really used in the New Testament, but it's a Greek word in Jesus' day. We often get the word school from it. Skole. Skole. Now, if we get the English word school from skole, very often we think the word must mean rigorous study. The word must mean intense examination and just barely passing by my fingernails. The word doesn't mean that. The word actually means leisure. When was the last time you thought of Asbury University and leisure in the same sentence? You might think sleep deprivation, exhaustion, too much reading, too many papers, and not enough time. But the ancient Greeks understood that the way we learn is when we actually have time in our calendar to be able to think and ponder about the big thoughts that you've been given. 6 days later, Peter pondered for 6 days that Jesus just trumped his theology. Peter thought he had the right, he was certain. But Jesus said, I'm sorry, son, you're flat out wrong. And I'm going to take you to a whole different place. So 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them onto a high mountain to be alone. As the men watched, Jesus' appearance was transformed, and his clothes became dazzling white, far whiter than any earthly bleach could ever make them. Then Elijah and Moses appeared and began talking with Jesus. Would anybody have liked to be there? I mean, they were alone, but man, I would have loved to have watched that alone time. I want to see Jesus transformed. I was reading a number of scholars about this not too long ago, and they were talking how this is a pre-resurrection appearance of Jesus. I'm not sure they're right. I'm not sure that Jesus wasn't being revealed as what it means to be fully human. I long to be fully human. I mean, I long to be what it was like to be Adam before the sin. I want to know what it's like. Hear me say these words. Please don't hear the wrong thing. I want to know what it's like to be naked and not ashamed. For people to know who I am, see the depth of my heart, and there is no shame. Their relationships are horizontally are absolutely pristine. There is no animosity from person to person. I long for that. And I long to be in a walking fellowship with the Father where He looks at me and I feel nothing but His pleasure. The disciples saw that. And Peter exclaimed, almost always in the Gospel of Mark, when you hear Peter exclaim something, dumb is going to follow. Rabbi, it's wonderful for us to be here. Let's make three shelters as memorials. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Isn't that nice to be the Son of God being revealed as the perfect human in the presence of God, and everybody's calling everyone else equal? You, Son of God, is equal to Elijah and equal to Moses. He said this because he didn't really know what else to say. Isn't that a great time to be quiet? If you've got nothing to say, be quiet. For they were all terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my dearly beloved son." Stop. Remember in Mark chapter 1, at the baptism of Jesus, the Father's voice appeared then. And He said very similar words. He said specifically to Jesus, "You are my beloved son. In you, I am well pleased." That is direct discourse from the Father to the Son. And we just get to overhear it. In this case, the Father is not talking to Jesus. The Father is talking to James and Peter and John. "This is my beloved Son. Listen to Him." In Mark chapter 1, the words, "You are my beloved son, and you I am well pleased," is a conflation of two Old Testament texts. One in Isaiah, and the other is in Psalm 2. Psalm 2, my friends, is a coronation psalm. Every king of Israel that is coronated, that is crowned, Psalm 2 is read over them. So, the baptism of Jesus is not necessarily his identification with humanity. It's His crowning at the beginning of the gospel. He is being crowned as King Jesus at His baptism. Verse 1 reads this way: "The beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ." And I explained to you that the term gospel and the term son of God are really terms that were equated with Caesar. And so the beginning of this text is telling us very clearly Jesus is being crowned as king. And what would you do if I told you that from a clear lexical use, the word begin, arche, the word begin in Greek could be translated not as the word begin, but as the word rule. This is the rule of the gospel of Jesus Christ. His baptism points to his kingship, and the Father in Mark chapter 9 is declaring that before the disciples that are watching in their presence. Let's build a temple for Elijah, for Moses, and for Jesus. And the voice is saying, don't trump my son with anything. Don't make him equal with Moses. And it doesn't get better than that as a Jew. And don't trump him with Elijah. And he is the great prophet. There are no equals with my son. You're treating his speech in a secondary way. Mark 8. Jesus declares who he is, and Peter rejects it. In Mark 9, verse 30, Jesus, for a second time, reveals that he is going to go to Jerusalem, be shamed, and be killed. And then the disciples immediately begin to talk amongst them of who is the greatest. You got to be kidding. Did you not just hear what I revealed? Obviously, they didn't hear. Why? Because they were deaf and they were blind. In Mark chapter 10, the same kind of thing happens. Jesus clearly reveals he is going to Jerusalem to die. And then James and John come to him, and here's what they say. Jesus, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Oh, friends, they're living in the land of miracles. I want this. I want that. It's like a Christmas list or a want list on Amazon. Jesus, give me all of my wants. And Jesus is trying to call them, and if you allow me to say, he is trying to call us out of the land of the miracles and into the presence of the Almighty God, who says this, he is my beloved Son. Listen to him. He speaks for me. And as you're walking through the gospel again and again, Jesus speaks and the people reject his words. I wish I could stand before you and tell you I've never done that. But that's not true. I was actually at dinner. Angie and I had dinner with Julia Herlow. And Julia has been a friend for quite a while. She was a student of ours at Indiana Wesleyan. Then we worked together at Indiana Wesleyan. And then we have kept in close contact. And she asked this question. Why did you leave Indiana Wesleyan and go to Kingswood University? That was a great question. Because it's a pretty big move to go from, at the time, the largest Wesleyan institution to the smallest Wesleyan institution. That's not exactly going up the success trail, is it? To go from an institution where I had the best job of any Wesleyan theologian, bar none, the best job, and to give that up and go to a small, struggling school in New Brunswick, Canada, which right now has about 2.5 feet of snow on the ground. It is really good to be here. So she asked how that happened. There was a lot that went into it. But we were sitting on the ground. We were sitting on the ground, or excuse me, on the floor of a room in our house. And as we were struggling, do I make this decision or do I not make this decision? Angie and I both sensed God was saying, go, go, go. And I'm here to confess to you I was hesitating. Because I wanted, hear me carefully, I wanted to live in this land. I did not want to go to Jerusalem. So July 3rd, I married our youngest, our daughter, did the wedding. And then on July 4th, we were sitting on the floor in our house, and I asked the question to my son and his wife, What do you think I should do? And my son boldly just said, Dad, I don't want you to go. Great. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. I'll use that as the confirming voice of the Lord. And then he said this, Dad, for the last 30 years, you and Mom have always said yes to the Lord. Is today the first time you're going to say no? I did not realize that my choices, my behavior, my ears, my eyes, my heart was being reflected to my son. And in that moment, there was both a verbal repentance and, yes, Lord, yes, to your will and to your way. Listen. Listen to Jesus and say yes. You're in his presence. He is speaking with clarity, with power, with grace, with profundity. He wants to move you from the land of miracles to the land of Jerusalem. And so we said yes. How about you? Other times, when God speaks and you hesitate, you ponder and you try to find a way out of his words, out of his will, because I want to stay right here. Mark chapter 8 and Mark chapter 9 is the call of God, both in the voice of Jesus and the voice of the Father. Come follow me as we go to Jerusalem. Leave aside this half of the gospel and adopt this half, because this is the half that will shape you to look just like Jesus. If you stay in this half, you will look and sound just like James, just like Peter, just like John. You will sound just like Herod. And you will reflect the culture in which you abide. But if you follow him to Jerusalem, I promise you, those things will be laid aside, and you will wondrously come into the presence of Jesus as he shares communion. He shares himself with his disciples. The teaching that takes place in the temple, you will come into the presence of where the woman comes with the alabaster jar, breaks it, pours it all over him, and then for the rest of his life, this wonderful fragrance that reveals itself wherever he goes. Or you can stay here and watch Jesus at a distance. The only problem is he will get farther and farther away from you. And as he speaks, you will barely hear. It will just be a whisper at best. Then it just may be sign language that you see. I don't know about you, but me, I want to be as close as I can get to him, almost so I can feel his heartbeat. Mark chapter 9, verse 14. When they returned to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd surrounding them, and some teachers of religious law were arguing with them. So quite a commotion when they come down off Mount Transfiguration. What are you arguing about here? Jesus asked. One of the men in the crowd spoke up and said, Teacher, I brought my son so you could heal him. But don't forget, Jesus wasn't there. This man brought his son to Jesus' disciples. And he is possessed by an evil spirit that won't let him talk. And whenever the evil spirit seizes him, it throws him violently to the ground. Then he foams at the mouth and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast out the evil spirit, but they couldn't do it. Now, in Mark chapter 6, Jesus sends the 12 out two by two. And they go out preaching the gospel, listen to me carefully, preaching the gospel and casting out demons. And when they come back, they tell Jesus precisely that. We preached, people repented, and the demons were cast out. So they could do it. But now Jesus has taught them, that's the land of miracles. I'm now calling you to follow me to the land of Jerusalem. And because of their disinterest in the mission of Jesus, their apathy towards his teaching, and Peter's rebuke of Jesus, now as they try, they now fail. They do not have the authority of Jesus any longer. Because he is speaking and they're treating his words as if they are of secondary importance in their life. Have you ever felt powerless in your Christian walk? Have you ever felt like, yeah, I'm saved. At least I've done all the things that the church has taught me about giving my heart to the Lord, but I'm powerless. I wouldn't be surprised that you may be just like the disciples. They have in the past cast out demons. They have in the past lived in the land of the great miracles. But now Jesus is calling them to a new sense of obedience, a new sense of calling. He's calling you probably out from that land to another. And he's giving you new instructions. This is who I'm calling you to be just like me. When I came to Christ, I hope this is okay. I hope you'll understand what this word means. I was hoodwinked. I was tricked in becoming a Christian. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I was asking Angie, I was pestering her with questions every single day, theological questions that she was not able to answer. And she's pointed me to a pastor. Go talk to him. So I went to the pastor and I began to ask him these questions. And he said, if you give your heart to the Lord, he will take care of all of your problems. Well, that sounds great. Who wouldn't want such a thing? And then I began to read scripture. And I began to realize that there was a half a gospel. But if you want to be full-orbed on for Jesus, he just might call you out and promise you that there will be suffering in this lifetime. There will be pain. There will be rejection. I didn't buy into that. I wanted this. How about you guys? I wanted all of my problems taken care of, and then crowns, well, forget about crowns in heaven, I want them right now. Jesus says, no, come, follow me. Follow me from that land to this land, and I will shape you to look just like me. And I will promise you there will be heartache and brokenness in your life. But when I redeem that area of life, you will be so much more empathetic towards other people around you. You will actually give thanks for that. That's what I'm calling you to. I'm calling you to be an ambassador of righteousness, and you can't be an ambassador of righteousness unless you've been broken and healed. So come with me. Come with me. Watch me die, then pick up your cross and come follow me. I was hoodwinked because I thought I was being sold this. This is what I was buying into. But then the voice of the Father says, this is my beloved Son. Listen to him. And I'm guessing right now that there are many people that have, if you will, bought this bill of goods. This is what I want in salvation. I have wants. Please, Jesus, fill my wants. And Jesus is calling us from the land of miracles to the land of the cross. He is calling us into the very presence of his Father. How about if I make just a basic observation to you? Hold your hands out. What's different about your hands from Jesus' hands? Besides, his are probably a little bit more calloused than yours. What's different about your hands from his hands? There are actually holes and wounds in his hands. Not just while he's on the cross, but even after God raises him from the dead, the wounds are still there. Can I see that? Say that again. The wounds are still there. And if you're a good theologian, you know that Jesus was raised in bodily form and ascended into heaven. So not only were the wounds at the resurrection, the wounds are at the ascension. And the wounds are also at the right hand of God the Father. They are still there for all eternity. The very bodily resurrection of Jesus teaches us many things. But one thing in particular it teaches us. There is value, eternal value in suffering. My friends, we do our very best to avoid pain. As soon as we have a cough or a sneeze, we run to the doctor and we demand some sort of pharmacological answer to that dilemma. When we have needs, we can push a button on our computer and bing, we've got an answer, instant gratification. But Jesus says this, I want to take you from the land of miracles to the land of the cross, to the land of suffering, to the land of shame, to the land of brokenness, and then I make you a promise. I will redeem you in that land, and then through that pain and reconciliation, I will empower you to be an agent and an ambassador of righteousness to all kinds of broken people around you. And then you will sit before them. They will share their brokenness, and they will say to you, I can't thank you enough because you're the only person around here that understands me. And at that moment, not only will you thank God for that company, you will thank him for the past pain that has actually made you the one person on earth to meet the need of the person in front of you. There is value in suffering. Jesus is calling us from the land of miracles to the land of the cross, to the land of pain, to the land of suffering. And he wants to redeem that in such a way to transform all of creation back into the way it was originally formed. So this evening, I'm going to ask you whether or not you want to traverse with Jesus from the land of miracles across that bridge of Peter's rejection of the Jesus agenda, the Father's affirmation of the calling and mission of Jesus, and then come follow him for the rest of the journey into Jerusalem. Will you follow Jesus throughout his entire life? At the end of this story, the disciples take Jesus aside by himself, and they ask the question, Jesus, how come we couldn't cast out the demon? What they really mean is, we used to be able to do that, but now we can't. Why is that? Here's Jesus' answer. Because this can only be done by prayer. So what is Jesus' definition of prayer? Is it just talking to God? Is it just conversing? Or might Jesus be saying, prayer for me is you aligning yourself, or in some cases, realigning yourself with the will of God. I choose to follow you, Jesus, wherever you're going. I'm not going to put any stipulations. I'm not going to ask for any level of comfort. I'm not going to ask whether a job will pay me enough or not. I'm not going to ask what kind of housing I can have. I am going to say yes to you, Jesus, and I will be following behind you. I will align my life with your will. This is my beloved son. Listen to him. Peter figured out who Jesus was by his own observations. I'm watching the things that Jesus did. Therefore, this must be who he is. My friends, you cannot figure out who Jesus is unless you read the word and align yourself with that word. Otherwise, all you're doing is making an educated guess. And everybody in Jesus' day guessed wrong. This is my beloved son. Listen to him. They don't. Power literally goes out of them, and the things they used to be able to do, they no longer could. And Jesus says, you want that back? Align yourself with me through prayer, and then come, follow me. Friends, the move into salvation, into the land of the miracles, is the first move. It's a huge one, but it's also the easiest one. The road less traveled is the road across chapter 8, across chapter 9, to go down from Mount Transfiguration, to have Jesus tell us, I'm sorry, you are no longer in line with me. You've traversed in the wrong direction. So now, today, I'm just going to ask you a very simple question. If you're living in the land of miracles, is it possible for God to call you to Jerusalem, to the cross, to the empty tomb, to Pentecost, to the rest of the world? Will you align yourself with Jesus and his words and his teaching? This is a hard word. John chapter 6, many of the disciples walked away because the teaching was hard. And I'm begging you, I'm urging you to allow the whole gospel play out in your life, and that you will make yourself an open vessel that God can use in a way that he can't if you just remain here. The church in North America is predominantly impotent because this is where we live. People come to church every single Sunday telling pastors, telling worship teams, telling the whole pastoral staff, meet my wants or I'll leave. And Jesus says, if revival is going to come in North America, we need to give up our wants and say, Jesus, I would much rather have you meet my needs. Take the deepest issues of my life, bring them up to the surface, transform them in your presence, so we take on the clothing that he did on Mount Transfiguration, and we become the perfectly embodied human being for his spirit to be able to indwell and empower to transform the world. Which church do you want to worship in? The church of wants or the church of spiritual empowerment, which one do you long for? Because this one actually has the presence of Jesus. I'm going to ask the worship team if they would come. And if they would lead us in that last song that they sung at the end of the first worship set. It's the presence of God that we long for. And I ask you to respond to his word however you like. Maybe standing right where you are and just saying out loud to God, God, I understand where I have been, but I don't want to remain there. I want to follow you wherever you will go. Maybe you want to come and to pray, to come and die, and ask for resurrected life to be renewed within you. I don't know what position you want to take this evening, but my prayer is very simple. That you would hear the voice of the Son and say yes. Would you stand as we worship together?